The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and also from the Harvard Health Letter. The first article comes from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, and it's from the August issue. It's entitled Pandemic Checkup, Charting a Course for Personal Health. The COVID-19 pandemic stands out as the most disruptive and deadly crisis in global public health in a century. Now a new era begins, fueled by safe and effective vaccines that have brought optimism and hope for the future. To make the most of what's next, experts say to be aware of health concerns that may have shifted down on your list of priorities during this time. Some researchers have labeled them pandemics within a pandemic. The first of these is mental health. About 20% of U.S. adults report a decline in mental health due to the pandemic. This includes 53% who said that they were very restless and 52% who said that they sat around and did nothing recently due to exhaustion. Caregivers, especially parents of young children who are unable to attend in-person school, reported unusually high levels of stress and anxiety. If you think you may have symptoms of depression or anxiety, talk to your doctor. It can be as simple as saying that you haven't been yourself lately and you'd like to talk about it. Counseling or psychotherapy and medications are common treatments. In older adults with mild depression, psychotherapy can be just as effective as medications. For moderate to severe depression, a combination of psychotherapy and medication is usually best. Mental health apps can be cost-effective, portable ways to learn and strengthen your coping skills. Free mental health apps that may be helpful include COVID Coach, that's COVIDCOACH. Breathe to Relax, that's BREATHE, the number 2, Relax, RELAX. Happify, that's HAPPIFY. Mindfulness Coach, that's MINDFULNESS, new word, COACH. Mind Shift CBT, that's MINDSHIFT, CBT. Super Better, that's SUPERBETTER, and it's one word. And Insight Timer, that's INSIGHT, new word, TIMER. Still, keep in mind that apps should not serve as a substitute for therapy. The next problem is avoidance of routine and emergency medical care. COVID-19 restrictions caused many health clinics to close temporarily and scale back non-emergency services. The risk of getting the virus caused some people to avoid healthcare facilities altogether. A Center for Disease Control and Prevention report found that emergency department visits decreased by about 20% for both heart attacks and strokes in the early months of the pandemic. Another CDC report showed that as of June 2020, 12% of adults had avoided or delayed urgent or emergency care due to worry about the pandemic. And 32% had avoided routine care. Early in the pandemic, newly diagnosed cases of common cancers dropped 46%. Healthcare professionals were among the first to be vaccinated against COVID-19, and most clinics and hospitals have fully reopened with ongoing safety precautions. If you have a chronic condition, schedule a physical exam. Schedule an eye exam. Schedule a dental cleaning if you're due for them. Check with your care team about which preventive services are due, depending on your age, sex, and risk. What are these preventive services? Well, they include blood tests for cholesterol, triglycerides, and diabetes, breast cancer screening, cervical cancer screening, in other words, a pap smear, colorectal cancer screening, dementia screening, fall prevention screening, lung cancer screening, especially for those with a history of cigarette smoking, osteoporosis screening, prostate examination, and routine vaccinations like those for influenza, pneumococcal infection, shingles, and tetanus. About 40% of U.S. adults reported gaining more weight than intended during the pandemic. The median amount gained was 15 pounds, although 10% of adults reported that they gained more than 50 pounds. This comes on top of an already growing obesity problem in the U.S. that began long before the pandemic. Obviously, something needs to be done about this, so to get to a healthier weight, start slowly with attainable steps, focusing on gradually improving your diet and exercise habits. Most gyms and fitness centers have reopened. If you need help, talk with your healthcare team about healthy options for weight management to improve your overall health and lower your risk of complications related to obesity. You may benefit from working with a team of health professionals, including a dietitian, a behavioral counselor, or an obesity specialist, to help you to understand and make changes in your eating and activity habits. The initial treatment goal is usually modest weight loss, 5 to 10% of your total weight. That means if you weigh 200 pounds and are considered obese, you would begin to experience health benefits by losing just 10 to 20 pounds. However, the closer you get to a healthy BMI, the greater the benefits. Substance misuse. Early in the pandemic, 13% of U.S. adults reported that they'd started using or increased their use of substances to cope with COVID-19 related stress. In December 2020, deaths from opioid misuse had increased over the prior year in 40 states. Nearly a quarter of U.S. adults reported increasing their alcohol consumption to cope with the pandemic. Some signs and symptoms of substance overuse include increasing your use over time, not being able to stop using, continuing to use despite the harm it caused, and withdrawal symptoms after stopping. If you're having any of these signs and symptoms, get help from your doctor or a mental health professional. If a friend or loved one needs help, talk with the person in a private, loving, and honest way. Doctors and therapists can help to treat the addiction, usually through a combination of behavior therapy, self-help support groups, and medication-assisted therapy. About 50% of U.S. adults reported that the restrictions of COVID-19 had a negative effect on their relationships. A year apart left them less connected to family, friends, and their communities, and reports of domestic violence have increased between 10 and 30% since the start of the pandemic. CDC guidelines allow more in-person contact between fully vaccinated people now, and most states and cities have loosened or lifted restrictions on gatherings. If you feel comfortable, reach out to your friends, your family, and coworkers you've missed. Consider starting small, a chat or a walk with just one other person, before gradually branching out into bigger or public gatherings. Understand that you may have social rust from so much time at home or away from loved ones, and that you may be physically and emotionally exhausted from resuming social activities. Consider meeting with a therapist to help shake off the social rust and return to pre-pandemic levels of social comfort. The next article in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter is entitled Heart Palpitations. Seek out the source of your flutter. You feel it in your heart, a quick couple of beats, a butterfly feeling in your chest, a trembling or quivering sensation, pounding or skipping beats. These are palpitations. They are the most common reason people seek medical care for heart issues. In most cases, palpitations don't signal a larger problem, but sometimes they do, and for that reason, you should seek care without delay. Medical professionals can help you to sort out the cause and severity. Many times, seeking care can lead to an improvement in your quality of life. Palpitations may be harmless, and no treatment may be necessary, but they may also indicate dangerous, irregular heart rhythms. See your doctor if palpitations become more frequent, noticeable, or bothersome. Drugs or procedures to treat these irregular heart rhythms may be required. If palpitations stem from an underlying factor, like anxiety or panic attacks, depression, stimulants like caffeine or certain medications, or an overactive thyroid gland, addressing that factor may take care of the associated palpitations. And the article goes on to talk about four different important kinds of palpitations. The first is called premature beats. This is the most common type of arrhythmia and may produce the sensation of a skipped beat or a fluttering in the chest. Sometimes the beats take place in the heart's upper chambers. These are called premature atrial contractions. If they occur in the lower chambers, the ventricles, they're known as premature ventricular contractions, or PVCs. PACs, the premature atrial contractions, and PVCs, the premature ventricular contractions, are usually harmless. They're the most common cause of palpitations, and many people are not even aware that they have them. The next important arrhythmia is ventricular tachycardia. This very fast, continuous beating in the heart's lower chambers may last for a few seconds or longer. An episode lasting less than 30 seconds may not cause any problems, but beyond that, the heart may be pushed into sustained ventricular tachycardia and possibly ventricular fibrillation. It's important to get a prompt, accurate diagnosis and appropriate care. In some cases, urgent care is needed, especially if you have chest pain, difficulty breathing, or fainting. Ventricular fibrillation can be life-threatening. Next is atrial fibrillation or atrial flutter. Atrial fibrillation produces fast, chaotic beats in the heart's upper chambers. As a result, the atria can't pump blood down to the ventricles. This causes pounding, fluttering, or irregular beating, which usually lasts only for a few seconds to a few minutes. Atrial flutter also is common, especially with atrial fibrillation. It produces a very fast, consistent heart rate. Over time, atrial fibrillation may lead to increased risk of stroke or heart failure. A doctor will likely try to identify an underlying cause first, like an overactive thyroid gland. If no cause is found, the doctor may propose treatment, including medications or an ablation procedure, and possibly an implantable device like a pacemaker. The last kind of arrhythmia is supraventricular tachycardia. That's S-U-P-R-A. Supraventricular tachycardia, or SVT, includes many forms of arrhythmia that originate above the ventricles, in other words, supraventricular. SVT usually causes a burst of rapid, consistent heartbeat that begins and ends suddenly, but can last from minutes to hours. In an otherwise healthy heart, SVT is generally not life-threatening, but the rapid beating can be quite uncomfortable. Most people with SVT don't require medical treatment. For people with prolonged or frequent episodes, treatment may include drugs or procedures to destroy abnormal heart tissue. Continuing with the Mayo Clinic health letter for August of 2021, I'm going to go over some questions in a section called Second Opinion. Question. At my last medical checkup, the questionnaire asked if I have an advanced directive on file. I've mentioned some thoughts on emergency care to my son, but is it really that important to have documentation in place? Answer. Everyone, no matter the age or current health status, is encouraged to write out an advanced health care directive. In an advanced directive, you name someone to make medical decisions for you if you're unable to express your wishes. This is known as power of attorney for healthcare. You can also specify treatments you do or do not want to have, like tube feeding or mechanical ventilation. These instructions are known as a living will. An advance directive is a gift to yourself. It ensures that in the event of a health emergency, you will be treated in a manner that you want. It's also a gift to your loved ones, who, by knowing your wishes in advance, will be able to act with greater confidence if they need to make life and death decisions for you. You can find state-specific forms for advance directives on many websites, like your state health department, or the AARP website. This is www.aarp.org/caregiving/financial-legal/free-printable-advance-directives. And then the last one is the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, and that website is www.nhpco.org/advanced-directive. As you fill out these forms, Mayo Clinic experts say it's best to have frank conversations with your loved ones about your goals and values for your health. These talks can help you refine your priorities and help your family better understand your preferences. You can discuss your specific desires further if your health status changes. Keep your advance directive in a safe place where it's easily found, not locked in a safe only you can open. Give copies to your chosen health care agent, to your close family members, and to your doctor. Keep in mind that you can change your directive at any time as your situation or wishes change. If you want to make changes, you must create a new form, distribute new copies, and destroy the old copies. The next question is, my grandchild, who was born a boy, is transgender and recently decided to start going by female pronouns like she and her. I want to support my grandchild, but I'm not really sure how. It's hard for me to remember to use the new pronouns. What can I do? Answer. You're off to a good start by choosing not to avoid the topic. While the question of pronouns is relatively straightforward, keep in mind that you have been using your grandchild's original pronoun for years, and it's an established habit. It may take a while to change that habit. Start by conveying to your grandchild that her pronouns are important and that you are working deliberately on using them correctly. One technique that might help is to journal or write about your grandchild using she, her pronouns. It's important to make a real effort to use an individual's affirming pronouns. But if you slip up, and you likely will, don't beat yourself up or magnify your mistake. Simply correct yourself and continue with the conversation. Apologizing profusely is often uncomfortable for the person you misidentified. If your grandchild ends up changing her name as well, you can address naming mistakes the same way. As for the larger question of how to support your grandchild, ask her or her parents if she's not ready to talk about it. How can I support you? Speak positively about your grandchild, and if she's comfortable with it, show your admiration for her identity and expression of it. Research shows that relationships between grandparents and grandchildren are important. If you find the situation especially difficult, you may want to consider reaching out to a professional, a support group, or a local PFLAG, which was previously known as Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. A support group can provide an opportunity to discuss hesitations you have, grief associated with change, or fear of how others might respond to your grandchild's gender. Now we're going to continue in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, and we're going to talk about Chinese cuisine. And it says, go beyond the basics. Fried rice, chow mein, egg rolls, they're delicious. But if those things are the only things that come to your mind when you hear Chinese food, there's a whole world of options waiting for you to discover. Chinese food represents a broad range of culinary styles. If you don't think you like Chinese food, it's possible you just haven't tried the right kind yet. Learn more about healthy Chinese foods and how to make healthy choices when dining in or eating out. Chinese food can be divided into eight regional cuisines. For example, Sichuan cuisine is known for its spicy fare, thanks to ingredients like chili oil, fermented bean paste, and the numbingly spicy Sichuan peppercorn, also called hua jiao. It's home to dishes like hot pot, kung pao chicken, and dan dan noodles. Another example is Jiangsu cuisine, which tends to be sweet and salty. Sweet and sour fish and salted duck would be examples of Jiangsu cuisine. Chinese cuisine may introduce you to Chinese eggplant. This variety has a slim zucchini shape, which makes it easy to slice for stir-fry. Lotus root. This is the underground stem of the lotus flower. It's a great way to add some crunch and texture to stir-fry or hot pot. Bok choy. This is a leafy green that's delicious in soup or as a side dish, stir-fried with a few ingredients like garlic and soy sauce. Bamboo shoots. A source of dietary fiber, minerals, and even protein. Bamboo shoots can be sprinkled in a variety of dishes. If you buy them fresh, boil them first to remove toxins. Try them stir-fried with a splash of low-sodium soy sauce or boiled in a delicious soup. Lychee. This sweet Asian fruit has a hint of rose. Like apples, lychee comes in many varieties of looks and tastes. Pomelo. Similar to grapefruit, which is actually the result of crossing a pomelo and an orange. Pomelo tends to taste less bitter. Chinese broccoli. This vegetable has leaves rather than the florets you find in Western broccoli. It's often served with oyster sauce and can be a tasty addition to noodles. It's great to support local restaurants, but the restaurants tend to add salt and sugar, and portions tend to be large. Try to limit calories and prioritize nutrition by avoiding fried or crispy items. Grilled or steamed items are healthier. Select steamed rice. Fried rice is prepared with oil, adding fat and calories to your meal. Choose brown over white rice, as it's a better source of fiber and other nutrients. A healthy serving of rice may be smaller than you think, just a half a cup. Choose veggie-heavy dishes. There are many vegetable stir-fries, noodle dishes, and soups to choose from. Always stir-fry smart. Stir-fry requires using oils with a high smoke point. Try to limit how much oil you use and opt for peanut oil or refined sesame oil. Watch the sauces. Sauces like hoisin, oyster, and soy sauce add strong flavors, but they can also add sodium and sugar. Look for low-sodium options or make your own sauce. Even these sauces may still be heavy on sodium, so use just enough to add flavor. Don't forget flavorful aromatics like garlic, ginger scallions, sesame seeds, Chinese five spice powder, and dried chilies. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.